1109-720-WGN. Matt Bubala here with you. Joining us on the phone again, we just had her on a couple of weeks ago. Her book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Noah Tishby is on the phone with us. Good evening, Noah. How are you?
Oh, you know, I didn't realize the book is going to become so current so quickly.
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, it's you know, you can't say, oh, this is great, because it's terrible. Why the book
of
is suddenly so relevant? It's awful. And I know we had you on for an hour a couple of weeks ago telling your story and telling the story of Israel as detailed in your book. And it was just starting to escalate when we did the interview. And now things are really just dominating the headlines right now with Palestinians and rockets lobbed at Israel like crazy, and Israeli rockets and drones dropping in the Gaza Strip. And I know that you have definite thoughts on everything that's going on. And I wanted to reach out to you because you are, you know, you're very strong in your defense of Israel and why things are how they are. And we hear about, you know, the Palestinians as the underdog. And you said, listen, it's this one democratic Jewish state with all these Arab neighbors that many of whom have vowed to wipe it off the map at some point. So that's the David and the Goliath scenario. And so this last week, so many of the headlines I'm reading are very sympathetic to the Palestinians. And I wanted to get your comments on that and ask you some more questions about that.
Yeah, this is, we were talking about this last time, and it's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking what's happening right now. Israel is the single democracy, the single consistent democracy in the entire region, and we're dealing with a terrorist organization that wants to enact Sharia law and is throwing rockets at Israel because of a conflict that has to do with houses. So you guys.
That's okay.
Not right now. Can you hear my son, who is not asleep? I apologize.
No, that's okay. Hey, you're in LA.
Right,
it's still relatively early.
So I apologize.
No, don't worry about it at all.
To a commercial in a second.
It's a whole new world. We've lived on Zoom for the last year and a half. We're used to having the kids around as part of the interviews. That's okay.
Yes, it is. I just sent him back to sleep. He's a big boy. He wants me to take a look at him at the camera. I apologize. I was cannot get up. Like, this is, you know, anyway.
I totally get it. So let's talk about that for a second.
There was a conflict. There's a dispute. There's obviously a dispute over land over there, okay? There's obviously a dispute over land. But Hamas has been gagging for this conflict for a month. And we've been warning that this is about to happen. So they're using this conflict over land, over deeds, over ownership of homes, and to rally their troops, literally saying Al-Aqsa is in danger. Al-Aqsa is the mosque and the Dome of the Rock and the third holiest place for the Muslims. Israel allows for freedom of religion. And Hamas, trying to get political points, basically rallied the troops and started firing missiles into Israel, rockets. And we're talking nearly 2,000 rockets in like 48 hours. This was a shocking escalation of the situation, unacceptable. And the thing is this, when you're dealing with a terrorist organization that calls for jihad and promotes and is enacting Sharia law, death is not a deterrence. So what they're doing is literally luring the Israeli army to attack, knowing full well what's coming. And this was devastating and shocking for everybody, because I don't think anybody in the even in the Israeli intelligence community did not realize Hamas was intending to escalate it this quickly. But when you fire rockets, when you launch rockets into a city, into LA or Boston or Chicago or wherever, you will get hit back. And that's exactly what they want. And here we are. And this happened very quickly. This is just the cycle that Israel's been dealing with for, you know, a century. And until there would be one side who would denounce terror and stop vying to kill the single consistent democracy in the Middle East, it's not going to stop.
All right. No, let me ask
you. The other thing that's shocking is, sorry.
Let me ask you some questions.
You look at social media, you see just skewed one side like Israel's the enemy. And I'm like, I mean, you guys have no idea what you're dealing with here. You have no idea what we're dealing with here. And I talk about this in the book extensively. Literally, I knew this was going to happen, and I was warning that this is going to happen. And I've seen the shift in public opinion in America, especially with the younger people. And I'm like, I really need to put all of this down so people have the context of what's happening. And I wrote this book. It came out a month ago, and now people are like, oh, wait, there's a book that can explain everything. I'm like, yeah, I wish we would have read it before it escalated this badly. It's horrific. People on both sides are dying. It's terrible.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Noah, hold on 1 second. We've got to take a quick break. And then there's a lot of questions I want to ask, because there is another side that I want you to answer about. You say that this is just about, you know, this is about housing. This is a real estate. In the article I read in the New York Times that I have right in front of me right now, it sounds a little bit more than that, that, you know, the Palestinians would view it as part of a greater escalation of pushing Arabs out of certain areas. So let's ask Noah about that when we come back. Noah Tishby, the author of Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth, here on 720 WGN. For speaking with Noah Tishby, her book, Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth, I guess even more misunderstood this week than it was even previously, if possible. All right, Noah. You are good at taking over and telling me things. So hold on. Let me ask you one quick question here, and then I'll let you comment on it. So
you know me so well.
So you labeled it kind of like, oh, it's just a sort of housing dispute. But the rather long New York Times article from May 7th that was updated in the last couple of days talks about the eviction of six families from this neighborhood in East Jerusalem. This went to the Supreme Court. It's a big deal. They're being evicted for Jewish settlers. So it's not, and you know, it was painted in there as a, if you had squatters on your land, or maybe you said that, wouldn't you evict them? Or maybe that was in the story that somebody else said that. But it's not looked at the same way by everybody. It's not like these people just showed up, right? They've been living there, and now they're being evicted so Jewish people can move in. It's a little more complicated than, I know there's the whole Hamas thing, and they're trying to push this because then they get more money because they get sympathy and all of those things. I get that. But there's also things going on that are helping escalate that. This whole a lot of this article in the New York Times was about these demonstrations that were going on because of these evictions that were coming up, and the police that were trying to put down protests using skunk water and things like that. And that you mentioned the mosque, the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They said that Friday there were Israeli police officers, people leaving were throwing stones at police officers who then threw stun grenades, fired rubber coated bullets. There was video showing stun grenades landing inside prayer rooms. So there is some aggression. I know that they're returning aggression that's being fired at them, but there is an escalation here a little bit on both sides before we got to the rockets, wasn't there?
So here's the thing. We can take this argument all the way back to Stu of Lentils, okay? This, and the other, okay? If you read my book, which we've spoken about this, you have, it's very clear that I'm all for criticizing governments, and I never claim that Israel is the perfect country. It's crazy to say that any country is a perfect country.
Of course.
Okay? So there's no question about that. I would never say, oh my God, Israel's perfect. America's not perfect. We're all, you know, we're all like, this is to create a more perfect union. It's all work in progress. So let's just meet, like, I just want to clarify that before I continue breaking down the Sheikh Jarrah situation and the Al-Mosque. Excuse me, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Funny night tonight, isn't it? So here's the thing about Sheikh Jarrah. A legal dispute was confiscated by extremists, okay? So if this was a Jewish on Jewish or Arabs on Arabs or in America or something, whatever, there was a deed that was bought in 1840-something, you know, by the Sephardi Jewish community. When Jordan invaded and took over, they didn't transfer land, so there was no British law. It was Jordan was under the British law, and under British law, you're supposed to transfer land. There was no transfer of land. And then after 67, when Israel is invaded and took it back, the original deed owners were like, oh, hey, we own these places, right? When Jordan had it from 1948 to 1967, they placed a few families and had them live there, but they didn't transfer the deed to them. Those families, since 1948, have been living there. Since 1967, have been living there and have not been paying rent in the past 20 years. So it's been a civil dispute and the civil lawsuit in civil court, it had nothing to do with the state for 20 years. But the landowners were like, now here's what happened. The landowners, the people who bought that deed, are settlers. So they also have an agenda, a political agenda. But they have an actual case that's unfortunately, like, problematic. Do you understand what I mean? Does that make sense?
It does, but so the settlers bought the...
Hang on a second. The thing to understand is that we're talking about a few homes and something that should have been settled in a civil courtroom, but was taken over by radicals. Completely taken over. And I would venture to say that if you have an argument over homes that is civil and political and this and that, but you retaliate against it with rockets, that's a disproportionate response. That's the thing that we need to look at and be like, what is going on here?
All right, Noah, let me jump in there. Let me jump in there real quick, okay, and ask you questions here.
We didn't talk about Al-Aqsa. Yes, go for it.
Well, no, I don't even want to jump back to Al-Aqsa yet, but I want to talk about, you know, you said that the settlers bought the deed. Who did they buy the deed from? If these other people have been living there since 67, but Israel's saying, no, it's our land, okay, you can buy it, and now that's your land. So I understand that that's a civil dispute and this should be worked out, but I would imagine that the other side would argue it's not just a civil dispute. This is a rights dispute because we don't have the voices. We can't fight back here. We don't have representation. The articles I'm reading that while you told me last time that listen, there's Arabs that live within Israel. It's the third largest population that we accept all people. But I've also been reading in these articles in mainstream media, in the New York Times and such, that the representation though is not the same. Is that true?
What do you mean representation? That's the same.
It makes it sound like that, you know, the Jewish people are full citizens. It sounds a little bit like how our country once was, that not everybody is treated equally.
That is not true. And listen, bless the New York Times. I read them, but I don't know what they're about sometimes. They're biased against Israel. I'm sure they're factual. I'm not sure I'm clear. Like, the Arab citizens of Israel have equal rights. They vote the same, get elected the same, they have equal rights. So I'm not sure exactly what they were referring to. I really am not. I need to look through this, but it's been quite hectic. Look, here's the bottom line. In order to understand the dispute, in order to understand the conflict, in order to look at what's happening in Israel and get, just get some clarity over this very important country and region, you have to be across the facts, and you have to know how Israel got there, why Israel is there, what has Israel been trying to do, how many attempts Israel have done at peace throughout the years, like how many offerings and peace solutions and peace treaties were offered to the Palestinians throughout the years. And as a liberal, which I am, it really makes you uncomfortable when years go by and you look back at history and you're like, huh, like, why do they keep saying no? What do they want? As a national movement, what is it that the Palestinian people want? I think it's something that needs to be spoken out very clearly. Because it's enough to say what you don't want, we get it. But what is it that you do want? And what we're seeing is another cycle of violence and another cycle of violence. And all the kind of peace camp in Israel is becoming flummoxed throughout the years. Because we're like, we withdraw from Gaza and we get rockets. We do this and we get rockets. We do that and we get suicide bombers. And it's like, there's an Islamist, there's an organization that has an Islamist agenda that is 30 miles from, like, your house. It's very easy to sit in America and judge Israel's actions. It's very easy to analyze it from afar, but you just don't know what it's like to live there and be under threat for like nearly a century. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely.
Coming up again. It's like I'm talking to my sisters on Tuesday. Rockets are falling on Tel Aviv. She's freaking out. She's crying. She's trying to find her 3-year-old daughter. She's like, I don't know where she is. I don't know. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like losing my mind. And we're talking again, like nearly 2,000 missiles, rockets and mortar shells in 48 hours. The country was bombarded.
Well, and that's not, we're definitely not reading as much about that. We're reading much more about the strikes into the exactly. Palestinian land. But is that because
that's literally why I wrote this book, because I keep seeing this skewed reporting in America, and I'm like, why are you not reporting what's actually happening? Look, I was with my boyfriend in Israel, and we're sitting there. It was like in one of the conflicts, and we're sitting on the beach in Tel Aviv, and an alarm goes off, right? Siren goes off, and like, and we're like, oh crap, again. And he's seeing the rockets falling and the Iron Dome coming out, and we're going to the shelter, and we're in the shelter, and we're like a little concerned. He's American. He was actually less concerned than I thought, and we go upstairs back to the hotel room, and we turn on CNN, and it says, the headline goes, Israel attacks in Gaza. And he looks at me, and he's like, that's not how it went down. We just got hit by rockets. And I just look at him, and I'm like, hey, welcome to Israel. And this happens every single time. That's literally why I wrote this book. I'm like, the coverage is one-sided. It does not tell the entire story, and it's sensationalist, it's reductive, and it's against the single democracy in the region, a stabilizing force in the region. And all the moderate Arab countries know this, which is why they signed these agreements with Israel. And the only ally of the United States, the only country that has the same values, and also the only Jewish state in the world. And we look at it as Israelis and Americans and Jews and people who support Israel. And we're very confused, very confused. And I go down into I go through that in my book, actually, regardless of this conflict. But why is it so skewed? I call it, it's the last chapter. It's one of the subchapters. It's called What's with the Obsession World? There's an obsession. There's a particular obsession about Israel that people have, that like they don't have their facts, they don't have their story rights, they don't know their history, but they have a lot of opinions. And we're seeing it on social media now to a point. I mean, I just got sent a post by a New York artist who has two veiled women wearing hijab. One of them is holding like a slingshot. The other one is holding a machine gun, and they have Tel Aviv written all over it. This is calling for killing of Jews. They're pointing like, I'm looking at going, how did we get to this? What on earth is happening?
We're speaking with Noah. Hold on one second. We have to take a quick break for the news. We're speaking with Noah Tishby. The book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Noah says, hey, the coverage is skewed. It's very pro-Palestinian when it should be more equitable on what is really happening on both sides. Let's try to dig into why that might be a little bit right after we do the news. Let's get into the News Nation newsroom right now here on 720 WGN. Eleven 36, 720 WGN. We're speaking with Noah Tishby. The book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Noah, I know that you say the coverage is really lopsided, and that's all about everything that's happening to the Palestinians. Is some of the coverage because Israel has good defenses? I mean, we talk about like 2,000 rockets have been fired into Israel. Are most of those not landing? Because you do have this Iron Dome defense system. Is that protecting Israel from, I know not from everything. I know Israelis have died and some of these missiles land. I believe missiles from Syria have now been launched towards Israel in the last day or so. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, Israel is able to protect itself from the strikes?
Yes, Israel is able to protect itself because Israel protects its citizens, because Israel has the Iron Dome and Israel has bomb shelters everywhere. And Gaza does not, because Hamas takes the money that the U.S. gives it and the EU gives it and Israel gives it and builds attack tunnels, which is what Israel attacked last night. Like, they build tunnels, they get ammunition. They don't use the money for their people. They don't use the money to protect their people because they want as many casualties as possible. And here's the thing that's hard for Western civilization to wrap their heads around. It's hard to understand that there's a culture, there's a doctrine, there's a Hamas charter that calls for as many deaths as possible. It's hard to understand that people like that would actually use humans as human shields. They will put them in the line of fire. It's one of those things that we can say until we're blue in the face because we know this, because we live there. But people in America, people in Chile, like, it's hard for people like us to understand that this is actually happening. It's actually happening. So Hamas's agenda is to get as many casualties as possible, and Israel's agenda is to defend the population. So obviously the numbers of casualties is not equal. This is obvious. And, you know, this is exactly why I wrote this book. I wrote this book because I already knew that people don't have the facts in the context. And if people would have read the book before, and the people that knew before, they would have had the understanding of what is going on there. What is the backstory, the history, and the context of the conflict? And not just look at horrific, sensationalist, heartbreaking photos and videos and covers, and just kind of look at it at face value. Face value. And what's happening on social media is not helping. Like, this has become about memes and not morals. Like, all these memes against Israel and against Jews, and, you know, we're looking at it going, wow, you have no idea what you're talking about. This is being on the wrong side of history 101. It really is.
A lot of the
tell me what I really think about it.
A lot of different ways I could go here now. A lot of what we're seeing, though, is Israeli families, Palestinian civilians. Hamas is this terrorist organization, but you can't exactly go after Hamas because it's not like, here's the Hamas base camp that you can go attack, right? It's sort of like the Taliban in Afghanistan. It's not this army that you can just attack like we're in a conventional war.
That's why the American military and people and friends of mine that served, they know what I'm talking about because they've been there and they see how these militias embed themselves in population without the population having any say in the matter, which is why I say in the book, free Gaza, indeed. Free Gaza from Hamas. Like, Gaza is actually, it is an open air prison. It is. But they're held captive by a terrorist organization that took power in 2007 and shot Palestinian Authority people off the rooftop and killed them. They did a coup to take over Gaza by force. Like their military arm called Ezzedine al-Qassam, which is those are the ones that are shooting rockets into Israel. They took over the Palestinian Authority offices and killed them in front of their families, dragged bodies on the street. Like these, we're talking with people that don't have the same values as we do. They just don't. And the poor people of Gaza, 2.9 million people that are living in, like, unemployment with no hope, they don't have a government or people that take care of them. It's an Islamist regime that is out to get not just us, like Western civilization. And that's what we're dealing with. And the world community need to call for Hamas to be dismantled, imprisoned, and stopped. 100% stopped.
But some of the world community has also been calling on Israel to back off on some of this. The pictures we see from Gaza are buildings that are destroyed and civilians that are dying as well. So how do we weigh that? How do we say
that's awful? It's awful, and it's not. This is the reason. So Israel knew that Hamas has been arming for a long time. Okay, and even the military actually suggested to the political arm, to the government, to attack a few months ago. They're like, they're arming, they're getting very strong. The tunnels are very, you know, there's a lot of intelligence, so the Israelis know what's going on there, right? And the political, you know, the politicians, they're like, we're not going to attack out of nowhere. We're just going to keep an eye on this. But we knew that they were arming. So this is awful because what happens because of that? Like, why are you arming like this? Why aren't you talking to Israel? Let's figure out how we can. Do you want a state? Okay, great. Let's start talking about borders. Let's start talking about, you know, why can't we do what we did with Egypt? Like, return the land, sign a peace agreement, cold agreement, but holding since the 70s.
Would Israel return land and sign a peace agreement? If
Israel offered to return land many times in the future. First of all, in 1948, the Jews got a piece of the land, and the Arabs got a piece of the land. The Jews said yes, the Arabs said no. And since then, they keep saying no. in every peace agreement that was not dissimilar up until 2000 and up until like the Trump Accord, right? And Bill Clinton and every, that there's like a million times where the Israelis were like, all right, here's the state, here are the rules, here are the thing, here are the, and they kept saying no. And 2000 was one of the worst turning points in the region. When there was an agreement, the Palestinians received up to 90%, upwards of 90% of what they actually asked, including like talking about East Jerusalem becoming like a capital. That was even on the table as well. And they got like over 90% of what they were asking for. Arafat got on the plane to go to Camp David with Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak, the Israeli prime minister at the time. The deal was done, and he landed in Washington and was like, I'm not signing. And the Israelis and the Americans knew that this may happen, and they're like, what are you, they're like, I'm not signing. And this happened over and over and over again. This is not, you know, I go through this in my book. For like every few years, there's a peace deal on the table, and every single time, the Palestinians say no. And as, again, as a liberal, you start thinking, okay, do you want a two-state solution, or do you want to wipe Israel off the mat? You're just playing a waiting game. When are you actually going to say yes to your own state and start building your own state and start taking advantage of Israel's like technology and startup and culture and everything? Like, we want to start having a relationship with you. You know what happened in Abu Dhabi and Bahrain and in the UAE? 2.5 minutes after the normalization agreement happened, half of Israel just took a plane and started going there, and like tourism and restaurants, and you started hearing Hebrew all over. That's like cultural exchange and people getting to know each other. That's what's needed in the region, not a lunatic, genocidal, Islamist organization that is calling for jihad. It's just unacceptable. And that's what we're dealing with.
How does that ever change? I mean, say Hamas goes away. You still have Iran. You still have other countries don't support.
Well, listen, I say Hamas, but I say Iran. It's like Iran and in Hezbollah in the north, that's also Iran. So you look at everything that's happening in the region, and when there's like a bad situation, you go back at the tentacle and you reach the Ayatollah. There's no question there. So it's obviously they're puppets of a bigger kind of Islamist revolution that's attempted, which is why the world needs to take part of this and the Arab world as well. And the Arab world has started. There's been these like changes, but the thing is this, and these agreements that have been happening with Israel and the like more moderate Arab countries, right? Taking a relationship public, basically putting it on Instagram. And the thing is this, the radicals in the region, they don't want these peace agreements. That's what's happening. Like, they will derail every peace agreement in the region, because to them, Israel is an abomination. Just the mere existence of Israel is an abomination. Like in Iran, they don't call it Israel. It's the Zionist entity. And like, do you really want to align yourself with the Ayatollah? Because that's what I'm seeing on social media by like a lot of celebrities, like talking about Israel in the same terminology that the Ayatollah of Iran is talking about Israel. I'm like, wow, try doing your bikini shoot in Iran. Let's see how that goes.
There's also been
I don't want to name names, but you know, I'm sure you know who we're talking about.
I don't, but that's okay.
Okay, fine. Well, some of our listeners right now know who I'm talking about. If not, you know, doesn't matter. Better not. Well, I don't want to put more emphasis on that misinformation.
I've seen some prominent Jews on social media expressing regret over what's going on right now. Does that frustrate you very much?
No, I express regret over what's going on.
But they didn't express regret like, oh, yeah, I wish this wasn't happening like you are. They are, you know, I'm ashamed that our country's doing this. I've seen some of that out there.
Well, great. I'd love for you to send it to me. I haven't seen it that way. Listen, I've been operating as a little war room here myself, like putting information out there and on my social media. So I don't have a lot of time to read.
Sure.
A lot more of what's happening in social media. It's just also very frustrating. So, you know, but I'd love to see what you're talking about.
I will. I'll text it to you. Where do you see this going over the next couple of weeks? Because it's getting, anytime there's loss of life, anytime there's destruction, it's scary, but it's escalating to a very scary level.
It escalated very quickly. We were shocked by this. we were shocked by this. The amount of rockets and the speed in which they landed, like, were 850 in one day. That's like the entire country in a shelter all day long, morning to night, to running in and out of shelter all day. So it was very quick. And then obviously Israel retaliated quickly as well and with force. I hope this calms down soon. It's unclear what Hamas is after, what they're going to be, what they want. They, from what I read a few hours ago, they've requested a ceasefire from Egypt. So I think Egypt is coming in to mediate, negotiate a ceasefire. But again, it's like, okay, great. So we get a ceasefire, and then when are you going to do that again? When is it happening again? Which is why, you know, people should read my book now to be prepared for the next conflict.
Again, the book
it's kind of.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Noah.
No, it breaks my heart. Like, this book comes out last month after years of calm, of relative quiet. You know, Israel's the only country, up until like a week ago, Israel was the country that won over COVID with like a vaccine. Like, the, you know, everyone was like, oh my God, yeah, Israel is so modern and so, you know, great. And I'm like, yeah, but you guys don't know what you really, like, you don't actually know what's going on there. And when, pardon my French, but I don't know if I can say shit hits the fan on radio. Can I say it? I just did.
Well, it's a little late now.
But when it does, yeah. But when it does, you're gonna be surprised by the how little you know. So here's a book. Get the facts now, and then you'll know why the next conflict happens.
Noah Tishby is the author of that book, Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. We always appreciate your time. I hope we can talk to you about more peaceful things next time.
I hope so, too.
All right,
I hope
Noah. So, too. Thanks so much for your time. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much, you too.
All right, thank you. We'll talk again. 1149, 720, WGN.